Okay, we are going to do some Seder, some Passover prep stuff tonight. So if you've got chametz, you don't have to actually move it from where it is. You just want to put something around it or a piece of tape over it so you don't inadvertently just pop it into your mouth by accident. And what happens, anybody remember this from last week? What happens if you would take some chametz and consume some chametz on Passover that you already sold? You'd be in violation of what? Right. Besides eating chametz, you'd also be eating someone else's food. You don't own it. It's not yours. So that's important. If anybody has any questions about it, I've been speaking to some of you about preparing your kitchens, which is fun. It's not a crazy thing to kosher your kitchen, depending on what your kitchen is and how much you want to kosher. So don't get intimidated by it. It's all in that packet out there. You literally just follow the steps. This is what you do for a convection oven. This is what you do for a gas oven. This is what you do for... It's just very, very straight. But on one foot, it's cleaning. Leave it for 24 hours. And then turn it on to its highest setting for an hour. That's basically how you kosher a stove. Top of the stove, okay? Sorry. Right, I know. I killed his stove.
No, don't forget to put the aluminum foil.
Yeah.
Unless you
are a sub. Right. Now, something I learned from Jonathan that I messed up on is that I've been telling people to spread the flame a little when you want to kosher the grates on the top. Okay? You can't really kosher the areas in between unless you take hot boiling water and pour it, and it's very messy. So I just tell people clean the areas in between the four grates and just cover it. It'll make your top stovetop look like a spaceship a little bit. That's okay. And then... But to kosher the actual grates, you just want to turn the flame on. And to spread the flame a little, you want to put a piece of heavy-duty tin foil. But what you don't want to do, which is how I destroyed Jonathan's oven, is that you don't want to take that tin foil and have it hanging over too much. Because you see, metal conducts electricity. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Metal conducts heat. It conducts heat. So we burnt the front panel. Because all the heat that was coming from the flame was going through the tin foil onto the fan. So I've only been koshering kitchens for 20 years. It's never happened.
Every once in a while
you meet.
You needed a new
one. Yeah. It wasn't like it was new or ready.
It wasn't ready.
Or expensive. You know.
The funniest thing you said, this is worth the whole thing. You're like, why don't you let it cool down? It's like the whole thing is like melted. You can see like the surface. And I was just like, let it cool down.
I realized I did it all on purpose. It was really a test to see how committed Jonathan was to his Jewish tradition. Because if you would give up your oven to the Jewish people, it's just weird. Anybody know how to kosher a microwave? It's very weird. Follow,
hot water?
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you create like a little schwitz in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you first have to clean it, leave it for 24 hours. And you know what's a pain about the cleaning? You know the little...
crevices?
Those little holes there? Yeah. You got to really clean that well. That's the pain in koshering. It's the cleaning. That's why if you have a self-cleaning oven, mm-hmm. just turn that sucker on, you're good to go. By the way, another thing, if you don't have to kosher your grates and you have a self-cleaning oven, you could take the grates and just throw them in the oven. They will discolor them a little if you... Just letting you know. That I know. That I know happens. Okay. All right, so that's koshering. And just make sure the most important thing, guys, is to sell it, to sell the chametz, and to do the bittul is even more important. What's the bittul? The bittul is the verbal nullification. Well, after the search... You do the nullification. We talked about that. That's really important. Do that in English, unless your vernacular is Aramaic. I haven't heard many of you speaking Aramaic, except you two guys when you studied Talmud a little. So that's preparing for Passover. And I want to mention also, if you're here, Joel's been working really hard in getting meals in different families for the Seders. We're having a Seder downtown that Rabbi Ezra is running the first night, the second night here, Aaron and Leora. And then we're having services Tuesday and Wednesday. It'll be 9:30 right up here in this room. And then the following week, Monday and Tuesday. Because remember, the holiday is over an 8-day period. Okay? So we hope you'll join us if you're in town, if you're here. If you want to come to services, we would love to have you. Any questions about that before we dive into the Seder?
About the big blind, do you physically have to do it? Can you just say, like, I mean, to remember?
No, you have to do it.
You have to do it.
You have to do it yourself. You could probably appoint someone to do it, but unless you're in the home, let's say you live with your family, you only need one person to do it for all the chametz that's in that home.
Okay.
But if you own your own chametz, let's say at work or something like that, then you have to do it. You don't want to be owning this chametz during the holiday. That's all. And therefore, if you left something, you forgot something, then it's okay because you did the bittul. Seder, how many of you guys are leading your own Seder this year? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
How many of you guys have a little control over the Seder even though you're not leading it? Okay. Like you could assert a little, like, you know, we should do this, or how about this, or suggest a certain idea. So what I want to do just the next half hour, I want to give you guys some information about the Seder, so just to make it more informative. I also want to recommend a book. My friend Aaron Goldscheider wrote a book, The Night That Unites. If anybody wants to get a really nice Haggadah with great commentary, this one's good too. I just happen to like that one. It's got all the it's got commentaries from Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik, no, not Lubavitcher Rebbe, wrong. Rav Kook, Rav Soloveitchik, and Shlomo Karlbach. And it's nice. It's nicely illustrated also. But I don't get a commission or anything. I'm just sharing that because I like it and I think you might like it too. Do you guys have your own Haggadahs yet? Anybody?
Mm-hmm. I do.
I'm telling you, get a Haggadah that you like with some good commentaries and do a little work before the Seder. Even if it's 20 minutes. Underline something. Oh, that's a nice idea. I want to share that. I'm telling you, it'll make the Seder for you. What does the word Seder mean?
Order.
What does it sound like? What else does it sound like? Seder?
Sidur.
Sidur. What does the Seder and the Sidur have in common? They're what? Both what? They're both what? They're both really long. What do they have in common? They're both trying to give order to what? They're both trying to give order to something which is a little amorphous. Because what's the purpose of the night of the Seder? You're fulfilling one of the 613 mitzvot on the night of the Seder. Vigadat lebincha b'yom ahu, and you shall tell over to your child on that day. There's a mitzvah to give over the Seder story to other people on the night of the Seder. It's a biblical commandment. And to feel what? To feel?
Feel the pain.
Feel what pain?
Well, to remember that we were slaves in Egypt.
Yeah, but more than remember.
To experience it as if.
To experience. Now, it's hard to do that. I don't know where you're going to be for your Seder exactly, but I'm going to be in Palm Beach, Florida.
Okay.
I'm not going to feel a lot of pain. Hopefully not, you know. A lot of the people in the hotel might be painful to be around. Maybe that'll be my pain. I'll bring someone really annoying to be at my Seder, and that will help me feel enslaved. And then you're also supposed to feel what?
Happy.
Happy. So you got a couple of things on the table to feel in pain and to feel happy. Throw them out. What's happy?
Charosa.
Charosis is happy, and you're putting what into the charosis? You dip the
lettuce?
You dip the maror, which you can use romaine lettuce for, because the maror represents bitterness. Okay? And you put it in there. So let's go in order, but you're going to see that every single thing represents either the pain, the oppression, the persecution, or the redemption. Okay? I'm going to point them out as we run through that. Okay, what do you have on your Seder plate? You got the maror. Now, the maror should either be freshly grated horseradish or romaine lettuce. If you use romaine lettuce, what's the thing to remember?
Dry it out.
Clean it, because little buggies get in there, and we don't eat bugs. How much romaine lettuce do you need to eat for maror? A decent amount. Don't be cheap with your romaine lettuce. You need probably a couple of leaves. You probably need 4 or 5 of these to eat per person.
Just for romaine lettuce.
If you're going to do romaine lettuce as maror, and I recommend, and you're not wussing out by using this instead of the freshly grated stuff. It's mentioned, romaine lettuce is actually mentioned in, I'm on page 18, by the way, if you want the Seder plate there. This is called maror. I know it doesn't feel like marah because it doesn't, you know. So then you could take a little freshly grated. That's what I do, and I put it in there a little to get that taste.
Horseradish.
But if you're going to, but not the bottled horseradish. That doesn't do anything.
Oh, really?
The bottled horseradish is not, you cannot fulfill your mitzvah with that. That's for your gefilte fish, okay? I know, by the way, everybody uses it. Everybody does a lot of things. Really? I've been doing that for like 25 years. What are you saying? I'm blowing up your little world right now, is what I'm saying. Okay, that's just what it is. So that's why I tell people use the romaine lettuce. Unless you want to have the freshly grated. Does anyone use freshly grated?
Yeah. Ginger, I do, so might as well.
Horseradish. And you freshly grate it, and you have to have about like a shot glass worth. Yes, you keep asking.
Like per person.
It's hard. You want to feel a little pain? How are you going to feel a little pain?
Some of the horseradish is legitimately like rough, though.
Doesn't matter. It'd be fresh.
Just it needs to be fresh.
You have a cup of wine to sip along with. No?
This just doesn't, it's not horseradish, it's processed. It's just not the real thing. This is fellowship, guys. This is the real thing.
Real thing.
And why?
By the way, it doesn't have to be painful, though, because why does this suffice?
So why is that?
Why that amount? It has to be a kazayas. Kazayas is an olive's amount. That's the amount. And I'll get to that. How much is an olive's amount of matzah? And how much is a... Zeke, can you do me a favor? Just grab me a regular piece of matzah from the other room that we were not the fancy matzah.
Can I get thank the you. Haggadah yeah. book.
What's that?
The Haggadah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Oh, thank
there you.
You
go. Question.
And when you say an olive amount, does the olive size change?
It doesn't change. It's one thing, but it's different in regard to different types of food. So there's a measurement for everything. I'm giving you the most lenient measurements. Trust me. I'm going to give you stuff that's not going to kill you, even though, you know, you seem like you're going to have a problem. Okay, you do the best you can. You don't have to get sick. You don't have to get sick. How much wine do you drink, by the way?
Four cups.
Four whole cups.
Enough
in your mouth. No, not 3.3 fluid ounces. The cup has to be able to hold 3.3 fluid ounces. And then you want to have like either try to drink the majority of the cup. Or at least a cheekful. And get yourself some good wine. Don't cheap out on the wine, because that's when you have cheap wine, it's hard drinking a lot of it. But if the wine's good, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
And you could use white or red, whatever you like. It's better to use red, but you could still use white. But I take some of the sweetened stuff because I get like headaches from too much red wine. So I'll take a little of the, what is it? Yeah, the Bartonura stuff. It's not cheating. Moscato, yeah. When I grew up, they had like the heavy Malaga. It was like a killer. I was like drunk by the second cup.
He couldn't find it. Should I go look for it? Here.
What do you mean? We had boxes of matzah. Yeah. This is shmur, and that's shmur also, but I just want to show people the size. All right, let's go through the 15 steps quickly. Page 19, you guys with me? You want to sing with me a little? You feel like singing?
Yeah.
Akadeh shorchas karpas yachatz magid rachza motzi matza maror korech shochan orech tzapon barech hal nehel nirsa. How many steps are there? 15 steps. Take a look at your handout that I gave you. What's significant about 15 in Judaism? Anybody know? 15? Is that, I put them on the... No. That's fine.
15 steps.
Get a piece of matzah here. There was like three boxes of matzah there. Zeke, we're paying you big money. You can't even... So there were actually 15 steps. There were 15 steps leading up to the temple, right? There are actually, how many psalms are there in the book of Psalms? It's 150, but 15 of them start with the words, Shir Lama'alot, a song of ascent. So there's so Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi of Israel, said that the 15 guided steps of the Seder are all designed to what? Elevate us. Get us to feel, again, what are we trying to feel? Like we were slaves. subsequently emancipated. You want to get into that energy. It's another reason I think we drink a lot of wine. Wine helps alter our state, our mood. So it helps, you know, without getting too smashed on it, of course. So we're going up, we're ascending. Let's go through some of those steps. What do we start with? Does everyone have to make the Kiddush at the table? It's like Friday night. Who makes Kiddush at your table Friday night? Except the one person. You don't all have to do it. Okay? If you want to all do it, that's great, but then you should try to say all the words. If you're not going to do that, just appoint one person at the table to keep everyone else in mind. Okay? Take a look on page 20. We start with the wine. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech olam. Right? You know the blessing over the wine. Borei pri hagafen. And then we continue. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech olam. Hashem bachar banu mikolam v'raman mikoloshon. And you say the whole thing. And then continue on 22. The blessing of Shehechiyahanu v'kimahanu v'giyanu. Lazman has, what's that? What's that over? When do we make the Shechianu Bracha? Guys? Something new? Passover Seder, you haven't had one since last year. You get emotional when you say the Shechianu? Basically recognizing and thanking God for keeping me alive, giving me life, and being given the opportunity to really celebrate Passover. They're going to be soldiers. Not going to be able to do a Seder this year. Or they're going to do something because they're going to be in Gaza fighting. So I'm not saying that to make us feel guilty. I'm saying that to appreciate that we can have a Seder. It's not a simple thing. And we're going to talk about some other Seders in a few minutes.
So we say it both times, so if it's something new, the
first yeah,
we do make it.
Because each day has its own separate Kedusha. Every day of the holiday has a separate sanctity of it that's unique to itself. And that's why you make the Shechianu both days. Now, I don't know how many of you guys have this custom. So there's a custom then to wash your hands. Usually we wash our hands for bread. But on the night of the Seder, we wash our hands for?
Karpas.
Karpas. What do you guys use for karpas at your table?
Salt water.
Parsley? Yeah, we dip it in the salt water. You could also use celery. What else? Anybody else have any other?
Scallions?
I think. Scallions, really?
Some Sephardic.
Right, but you don't use the scallions for carpaccio. I love scallions. What else can you use if you're from Poland, like my family? Potatoes. Thank you. And what bracha do you make? You make an adama because that's from the ground. But what should you keep in mind when you make that adama? Something that's going to come up later that also should get its own adama, but you don't make it later, so we keep it in mind now. Think. What else on the Seder plate are you going to eat later that really requires an Adama? The Maror. Where's the Maror from? It's from the ground. And you're not making an Adama later, so do it here. There's a lot of halachic discussion. Why don't we just do it again then? We don't want to take God's name in vain. So when you make the Adama earlier on, try to keep in mind it's going to be for the Maror later too. Why do you dip the karpas? What is the karpas supposed to represent?
Oh, thanks.
Tears. Spring. Oh.
Well, the salt water represents the tears, rebirth. So positive or negative?
Positive.
Salt water?
Negative.
Why are we putting them together? That's life. Right? Jews do that. Why? Because that's life. Right now, we're so excited. We're going to have a great Seder. And Iran just tried to destroy us on Saturday night. On Saturday night, they sent 300 missiles into Israel. I mean, that's something to think about and talk about at the Seder, by the way. When you say the words that in every generation they tried to destroy us, but Hashem saved us, behold, Abadur, we'll get to it. I mean, don't just say the words. Talk about it. There was a physicist in Israel that talked about the chances that 99% of those rockets were all intercepted. There was a little Bedouin girl that was injured. But he said it was a complete miracle. And people should be celebrating that as a miracle. And it's unbelievable what's happening. So there's still bitterness going on. On the other hand, we're still surviving. They're both happening, the salt water and the karpas. And by the way, every soldier that I met when I was there wants us to celebrate and wants us to keep being Jewish. The reason they're fighting is so that we can do this and not to feel guilty. but we should still do our part, obviously. And that's something to talk about at the Seder. What are we doing differently this year around Passover that we didn't do last year? Keep that in mind. Very, very important. I actually have a prayer. I'm going to try to take a picture of it. Who can remind me to do something tomorrow that I'll otherwise forget?
I can.
You can. And you will.
I will.
You're very reliable like that. I have a prayer that a rabbi from Amsterdam, Holland, wrote when he was in the camps. And he asked everybody to say this prayer before they ate chametz on Pesach. Are you allowed to eat chametz on Pesach?
No.
No, it's absolutely forbidden. So why were they eating chametz on Pesach? Because they were in the concentration camps. Now, you never make a bracha on something that you're not supposed to do. So let's say you're forced to eat non-kosher food. You're on a desert island, and the only thing to keep you alive is a pig. You slaughter the pig, and you eat it. Do you make a shahakol on it?
No.
You do not. So what was this? This was not a bracha. This was a tefillah. And I have to show you the tefillah. It's magnificent. I was going to make 1,000 copies because there are 1,000 people in the hotel with me that I'm going to, that I'm rabbinating at. And I wanted everybody to say this tefillah. And this prayer basically is saying, why? What do you think he put in that prayer? I'm not supposed to eat this. It's forbidden to eat this. Jews have gone to great lengths not to eat this stuff on Passover, but I'm eating it. And it's a mitzvah for me to eat this. Why? Because that's what I need to do to survive. And v'chai behem. And you're supposed to live by the mitzvahs and not, God forbid, die by them. That's Judaism. And I want to give you that. And it's a nice thing to share at your Seder. Also, I have another sheet that I want to make a copy of that has all the remaining hostages. And that should be given around at your Seder. And you should look at the names. Keep them in mind at your Seder. Who knows what they're going through this Passover. Very, very important to make your Seder relevant and meaningful. Not to press it. And to keep everybody as engaged as impossible. A little tip. Go around. You don't have to have one person, you know, shoot me now, one person who's putting everybody to sleep. You can each put everyone else to sleep. Everyone can do one little paragraph themselves. And you don't have to do the Seder in Hebrew. And there's a lot of stuff that you can skip. Better to do the things you do meaningfully than run through everything. Okay, I'm going to show you now in the next 10 minutes, okay? So Karpas, Borei Pri Adama, we make the Borei Pri Adama. Turn to page 25. Then you break the matzah. Now, we just did this in the Seder before. You have 3 matzahs. Anybody know why 3 matzahs? Kohen, Levi, and Yisrael, 3 types of Jews. But also, what do you usually have at your Shabbos table? How many loaves?
Two.
Why do you have 2 at your Shabbos table, guys?
Double portion on
Double
Shabbat.
Double portion on Friday. God said, don't collect on Shabbos. I'll give you double on Friday. It represents our faith that we can... Every time you see those double portion of Shabbos, you remember, like, I can keep the Shabbos. I'm going to be okay. Okay? The business won't close down without me for one day a week, right? So why do you have a third on Passover? Because it's a separate mitzvah to eat matzah on the night of the Passover. It's a biblical command to eat matzah. So the third is for that mitzvah. So you have 3. You take the middle one. This is the top. This is the bottom. Is this the middle? Yeah. The middle, remember, this was together. So the middle one would be together in there, and you break it into 2. Okay? Why do you break it into 2? Because a poor man never has a full piece of bread. Talk to anyone who, a lot of survivors turned into hoarders. Because when they got a little something, they kept it. They never had a full thing. And that's something to think about, slaves, getting into the whole mindset of slavery. You take the smaller part, and hide it. What's that called? The smaller part? Put the bigger part back in. It's called the afikomen. Afikomen is a Greek word. It means dessert. It's supposed to symbolize and represent what? That we no longer have anymore. The paschal offering. Okay, which was the last thing to be tasted on the night of Passover. Remember, for close to 1,000 years, this is the way Jews celebrated Passover. Everybody schlepped their animal to the temple. They slaughtered the animal, and they ate the meat together as a family. That was the Seder, basically. And to remember that, we have the afikomen. We also have this gross thing. It's the grossest part of this. You don't have to eat it. It's just there to look at. That's called the shank bone, and that's supposed to represent the paschal offering. All right. So you put that away. Why do we do this little shtick with the thing, with the prizes?
For the kids.
Why?
It's fun.
It's fun, and what else does it do in regard to kids? Very smart.
What helps teach them that matzah is something to, it like makes matzah more appealing to them?
Yeah, because you're putting it away in the beginning of the meal for when?
Later.
So that keeps, I just said this before. Remember when you were like 5 years old and you would like, you'd do anything for like that stupid trinket or whatever it is that you were fantasizing about. So like you tell the kid, here, you can get whatever present you want, but you know you can't do it now. You got to wait. You put it aside and all of a sudden, kid's paying attention. It's very smart, and it works. Yeah.
Wasn't it also like the Greek word for dessert?
And it means dessert.
Right.
That's actually what it means,
afikomen. And they had like these big parties with big desserts, and the fact that we're just giving like a piece of matzah is like almost like...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, afikomen.
It is a Greek word. It's not Aramaic, Hebrew, Farsi, or anything like that. It's like, it's Greek. Not that I speak Greek, but I know it's Greek. In the times of the temple, the last thing that was supposed to be the taste on your mouth was the meat from the Paschal offering. So that's why the last thing that you eat before you bench, before you recite grace after meals at the Seder, is the afikomen. But that's a nice interpretation that you're sharing.
I'd rather...
Some also say that parsley, like we wash our hands before the parsley. Now usually when you wash your hands, you're washing them before bread. And the Kabbalists teach, it's really Rav Nachman of Breslov, he taught this. He said usually washing represents what you do in your life to bring sustenance into your life. The job, the hard work. And then you sit down and you have a proper meal. Here you're sitting down after you wash. And you're having a little piece of parsley. It's so measly. It's supposed to teach you gratitude. Supposed to teach us that we have to learn to be grateful even for the small little things that we have in life. That's what some say the karpas represents. Take a look on page 25. This is the bread of affliction. You take out the middle piece, hold it up, and you said, this is the bread of affliction, read with me, that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is needy, let him come and celebrate. Now, I think I mentioned this before also. Is that a real invitation? In the middle of the Seder, you pick up the matzah and go, anybody need a meal? Anyone hungry? Sounds pretty insincere to me. Like, if you want to, does anyone know where you're going to be in the Seder? Like, if you want to invite someone, it's Wednesday night now. You probably should text some people tomorrow and say, would you want to come to the Seder? It's Monday night. Imagine getting up at your Seder Monday night, taking a piece of matzah, opening up the door and going, anybody want to come? No one's coming. What is that? So Rabbi Soloveitchik said on this, it's not a real invitation. What it is symbolic of what? I forgot about Eliyahu. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You have to fill up a cup. He joins the Seder. Mm-hmm. We used to watch the cup and see if it went down. but I'll get to Eliyahu. It's really symbolic of what a Jew does with their freedom. We're not just celebrating freedom. We're celebrating what we do with our freedom. And what do we do with our freedom, with our bounty, with our blessing? To share it. So how are we sharing our blessing with others this Passover? So maybe you will invite somebody to your Seder who's a little down and out. Maybe they have all the money in the world, but they're depressed or they're upset. Their girlfriend just dumped them. They lost their job and they need to pick up. Seder is something for that. Or, what can you do before? So I'm going to share with you a link tomorrow to the Rabbi Leo Young, who was a big rabbi here at the Jewish Center. And there's a memorial fund set up in his memory for Passover. It's called Maus Chitim. Has anyone heard of that? Maus means money. Chitim is wheat. It's specifically money that we collect for poor people who can't afford matzah, maror, and all this fun stuff. You should sit down to your Seder feeling like I helped somebody else have a Seder too. Really, really important. Will you remind me about that too?
You got it.
Two things.
Prayer?
The prayer. And there's two prayers actually.
Two prayers?
One is one of the hostages thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the prayer in the camps,
mm-hmm.
and then the Maos Chitim.
Okay.
You want to write that down?
I'll remember.
If you don't mind. Okay, you're great. Thank you so much. All right, who does the Manishtana? Did you guys do that growing up? Anybody? The youngest. I don't know. It doesn't have to. Whoever wants to do it, don't persecute the kid who doesn't want to get up.
He's
going to be in therapy for the rest of his life because his parents made him sing. He has a terrible voice. His Hebrew's awful. And he has to stand up on the chair. And then he's in the... but our kids used to come home and used to come back in different languages. That was the shtick every year that came with a different language. Spanish, French, I just said this before. I got old. My daughter came home when she was 7 or 8 with and being able to do the Manashtana in Yiddish. Uh-huh. And my father was a mess when he saw his little granddaughter doing the Manashtana in Yiddish. It was like, and we surprised him. She doesn't speak Yiddish. But, you know, you could teach a kid any language at that age. It's just like sponges, you know? And she did it perfectly. It was, like, great. And they added a little line, in like, Tati, I have some questions. So she went over to my dad, and she said, Zadie, I have some questions. And then started to, like, ask the questions in Yiddish. It was just, yeah. Yeah, if you can get stuff like that done at your Seder, you'll keep people up. Yeah, this is the first Seder without my dad. So,
sorry.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so the kids ask, what are the questions the children ask? Why Manishtana, why are we eating the chum, why are we eating matzah? Why can't we eat regular bread? Vegetables. We normally eat regular vegetables. What's with this Mara stuff? It's weird. And by the way, and you can improvise at the Seder. You can throw in other strange things. Any other strange props you want to throw in at your Seder? Does anyone do anything weird? I wrote an article recently. I shared the story that Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he was like 6 or 7, he told the story that his grandfather, the great sage of Chaim Soloveitchik, showed up to his Seder with a pot on his head. And all the kids and all the grandchildren were like giggling. Zadie has a pot on his head. He looks so silly. And they asked him, Zadie, what's with the pot? You know? And he said, I didn't realize because tonight's different. And he just used it as a prop. Like, you don't have to just stick with this. Some people wear costumes. Has anyone seen a kittel? My dad used to wear a kittel. It's like a white robe. You wear that when you get married. A couple on Yom Kippur. And what happens when the kid asks these questions? Why is this night different from all the other nights? Thinking of such a stupid joke that I'm about to share, but I'm not going to do it. It's a terrible joke.
Do it.
It was a Jew that was supposed to be knighted by the queen, and he forgot the line in Latin he was supposed to say, so he just said, Manishtana Halaylazah. And then the queen then turned to her advisor and says, why is this night different from all the other nights? Terrible. Okay, so you hear the answer to the question? Come on, it's cute, a little. No? A little play on words. How do you answer the kid's question? Don't look down. If a kid asks the table, why is this night different? What would you say? What's that?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
What would you say?
Because of what God did for us, taking us out of Egypt.
Yeah, we used to be slaves, and God took us out. That's one answer the Talmud gives, but there's a debate. And we have both incorporated into the Haggadah. The first thing that Tom just said, take a look, it's 26. Abadi mayinu hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim b'mitzrayim. Ay abadi, right? We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, but God took us out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, right? Now that's the, what kind of answer? Just a simple historical answer. What's another answer you could give a kid? Think theological, philosophical. We weren't just taken out of Egypt. What else changed? What else did taking us out of Egypt change?
Became the Jewish people.
Yeah, keep going with that.
Our souls,
our Jewity. What? Well, keep your finger on 26, 27, guys. And skip to page
31.
All right, Nava just heard this. On page 31. Wait, don't look down, though. What were you saying? What else changed?
Our relationship with God.
We used to be what, and now we were what?
Idol worshippers.
We used to be idol worshippers. We were no different than the Egyptians, right, in terms of our theology. And then what changed? Why did God take us out of Egypt? We grew up saying because we were, you know, God's a good God, and he's nice, and the Egyptians were mean, so Hashem punishes mean people and saves good people. That's great. Why else did God take us out of Egypt? To be the Jewish people, which means what? To start believing in a one true God and sharing that idea with the rest of humanity, which we've done a pretty good job of throughout the ages. So that's, if you take a look on page 31, That's the, we also give that answer to the kid. Originally, our ancestors, second paragraph on 31, originally our ancestors were idol worshippers, but now the omnipresent has brought us near to his service. Right? And this is a good opportunity to really get into a conversation with people around the table. What's your belief? Do I believe in God? I believe in God. And what happened with October 7th? I've been sharing some other more inspirational stories, like, where is God now? Sometimes he shows his hand, and yet we're still here. What are the chances we're still here? How many countries could have shot down 300 rockets on Saturday night? On the other hand, why? How many countries are being fired into like this? You know, what does it mean to be part of the chosen people? You know, this Seder should be a little different, guys. Like this something. You know, we're under attack. I'll share something else. Go back to 26:27. It's something I've been sharing every year at my Seder, and now it really takes on added significance. There's a little story on 27, the second paragraph from the bottom. It happened that Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Joshua, Rabbi Elezer ben Arzaya, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, they were all gathered at their Seder in B'nai Brak. You know when these rabbis lived? Anybody know? What period of time? Rabbi Akiva? After the destruction of the Second Temple, but during what revolt? Around the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt. And it says here that they stayed up all night discussing the Exodus until their children came, their students, and said, you got to come, you got to say the Shema. They were up all night. How long does your Seder go for? Their Seder went all night. And their students had to say, you got to say the Shema. You're going to miss the time for Shema. They were up all... What's going on here? What do you think they were discussing all night? I'm sure they were discussing deep theology and philosophy and Kabbalah about the Seder and about the Paschal offering and about all of this stuff about Passover. What else do you think they were talking about?
Self-defense.
Are we with this Bar Kokhba revolt or not? And how are we dealing with the Romans? So what's so interesting is that the people who wrote the Haggadah were going through their own Exodus kind of situation. And we reading it 2,000 years later, we're also under attack, and we're still going through what we're going through and trying to figure out what's the best move. Should Israel respond to Iran? Because it will escalate things. If they don't, is there any deterrence left? What do we do? It's not an easy situation. Now, I'm not suggesting you get into politics at your Seder table. The whole thing could blow up then. That's not good. So you want to be a little, keep the ball in the ring a little. You know what I mean? But it's something really to bring in and to discuss. Okay, so those are a couple of things to mention. You got the four sons on page 28. I don't know if you want to assign a different son to a different person sitting around the table. Just be careful who you give the Russia to. The mm-hmm. wicked son to on 29. Beautiful little teaching, by the way, if anybody's interested about the Russia.
Yeah, what's the explanation? That
blunt his teeth, it says. I have a beautiful explanation I saw in the Haggadah of Shlomo Karlbach. He said, the Hebrew word for teeth are shinayim. So it says, hakeat shinav, blunt his teeth. So if you look at the Hebrew word rasha, resh, shin, ayin. Resh and ayin means, you know, wicked person. But the resh in the beginning and the ayin at the end spells ra, which means bad. What's in the middle? The shin. When it says hakeat shinav, it's a little play on words. Knock the shin. Because when you confront someone, a Jew who's a little rebellious or a little like anti, you're just getting what you see on the outside. But deep down, there's something very, very sweet. You just have to get in there. Don't get too distracted by the resh and the ayin on the outside. You got to hakeat shinav, you got to knock the shin. Knock the shin out of him, excuse me. Knock the shin out so you can get to what's sweet in there. And never give up on anyone, because, you know, you heard Lubavitcher Rebbe, he coined the famous phrase, the fifth son. Who's the fifth son? Yeah. You want to make sure the four sons are properly engaged at your Seder so they don't turn into a fifth, the one who never comes. So that's a very, very important idea to share at your Seder. And I would sing the next paragraph on 30 or 31, page 31 on the bottom. V'hishyam da lavoseh v'beinu, v'hishyam da lavoseinu v'lavabanu, Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu lechalo lasebeinu amad aleinu lechalo. Maybe we'll do it. We're going to go in just a few minutes to Yosef's musical meditation. Maybe we'll sing this. It's a gorgeous song, but you know what it means? In every generation, they try to destroy us, but Hashem is there to rescue us from their hand. Talk about that. How much is the IDF? How much is Hashem? Miracles, not miracles. What's going on? This can be very positive, to keep it positive, because a lot of people are very upset this Pesach. There are tens of thousands of displaced Jews in Israel, and a lot of families sitting without their loved ones, young, holy Jewish soldiers that were killed in the last couple of weeks, the last couple of months. But they gave their lives so that the Jewish people could continue. And we have a promise from Hashem that we will continue. And all you have to do is read a little Jewish history and realize that if we just continue to do what we're supposed to do, Hashem's going to watch over us. Because what did Hashem do? He passed over all the homes. We put a little blood from the Paschal offering and Hashem passed over. It's getting late and I want to keep you here all night. So I want to just mention one last thing on just halachically. On page 42, just skip to 42. You can skip a lot of the stuff in the middle, but you want to make sure that you hit this, page 42 and 43, where it says Rabbi Gamliel used to say. You want to make sure that you hit those. Rabbi Gamliel used to say, whoever has not explained the following three things has not fulfilled their duty. Pesach, and then you point to the kind of yucky-looking shank bone over there. And then matzah, you point to the matzah and maror, and then you go through each one. And remember we spoke about last week what the matzah represents? Humility, the belief that God's involved in our lives and He didn't just create the world and put it on an automatic timer. The maror, right, bitterness. And then keep reading on 44, 45. If you want to continue doing this, well, sorry, I just skipped. You keep doing this. You go through the Hallel, expressing gratitude. And then you have the cup, the second cup of wine. Remember, the first cup was the Kiddush. This is the second cup. And then you got a bunch of rituals. You go wash for hamotzi, you make the hamotzi, make sure to eat how much matzah? 3/4 of a piece of matzah. Not of the big suckers here, but the regular size matzah, you want to try to eat 3/4, as much as you can. And then afterwards, eat the maror. We spoke about eating the maror. You make a bracha, al chilat maror, and then you eat your meal, grace after meals, and there's some more prayers afterwards. You do the best you can to try to make it as meaningful and as uplifting. And I'm telling you, the more you prepare, the more this Seder will come alive. Because the more confident you'll feel and the more explanations you can provide. And it's endless. Like, you can go on and on and on. So don't feel if, like, you get, you know, just prepare a couple of paragraphs. You can listen to this again if you'd like. I taught a class before this where I shared some other insights. There's a lot of stuff online. But I really encourage you to make it as meaningful as possible. Any questions about the Passover Seder?
You have to read it word for word, English or Hebrew? Or
just the parts that I said.
Oh.
Just the parts that I said.
So all like the long discussions about, was it 50, was it, you know, 50 no. plagues or 100 plagues?
No. It's a nice thing to do, and most people do it, but it's not a requirement. You still fulfill the mitzvah without it. Yeah.
The different Haggadahs that exist, it's just the commentaries different?
The commentaries, you know, if you're getting a traditional one, you know, because they have like feminist ones and they have ones for this and ones for that, you know. So as long as you're getting a traditional one, you're just getting the basic, the text is the same. The text should be the same. We're coming in right now. You want to start? Yeah, it's good. This is good for MGE time, believe it or not.
At the program you go to, you leave for the whole place?
You mean for the Seder?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
I'm...